Luce. Roland was chuckling at her expression as she watched Daniel.
Don't you think you should answer the door?
The doorbell rang. Is that Callie? Luce's mom called from the kitchen over the whir of the stand mixer. Got it, Luce shouted back, feeling a cold pain spread through her chest. Of course she wanted to see Callie, but more overwhelming than her joy at seeing her best friend, she realized, was her hunger to see Daniel, to touch him, to hold him and breathe him in, to introduce him to her parents. They would be able to see, wouldn't they? They'd be able to tell that Luce had found the person who had changed her life forever. She opened the door. Happy Thanksgiving, a high southern voice drawled. Luce had to blink a few times before her brain could connect with the sight before her eyes. Gabby, the most beautiful and the most perfectly mannered angel at Sword and Cross, was standing on Luce's porch in a pink mohair sweater dress. Her blonde hair was a gorgeous frenzy of braids pinned up into little swirls on top of her head. Her skin had a soft, lovely shimmer, not unlike Francesca's. She held a bouquet of white gladiolas in one hand and a frosty white plastic ice cream tub in the other. Next to her, her bleached blonde hair grown brown at the roots, stood the demon, Molly Zane. Her torn black jeans matched her frayed black sweater, like she was still following Sword and Cross's dress code. Her facial piercings had multiplied since the last time Luce had seen her. She had a small black cast-iron kettle balanced in the crook of her arm. She was glaring at Luce. Luce could see the others walking up the long, curving walk. Daniel had Callie's suitcase hoisted up over his shoulder, but it was Cam who was leaning in, smiling, his hand on Callie's right forearm as he chatted with her. She didn't seem to know whether to be slightly nervous or absolutely charmed. "We were just in the neighborhood," Gabby beamed, holding out the flowers to Luce. "I made my homemade vanilla ice cream, and Molly brought an appetizer."
"Shrimp Diablo."
Molly lifted up the lid of her kettle, and Luce breathed in a spicy garlic broth. "Family recipe." Molly slapped the lid back down, then pushed past Luce into the foyer, stumbling over Shelby in her path.
"Excuse you,"
they said gruffly at the same time, eyeing each other suspiciously. "Oh, good." Gabby leaned in to give Luce a hug. "Molly's made a friend." Roland took Gabby into the kitchen, and Luce had her first clear view of Callie. When they locked eyes, they couldn't help themselves. Both girls broke into involuntary grins and ran toward one another. The impact of Callie's body knocked the wind out of Luce, but it didn't matter. Their arms were flung around each other, each girl's face buried in the other's hair. They were laughing, the way you laugh only after too long a separation from a very good friend. Reluctantly, Luce pulled away and turned to the two guys standing a few feet back. Cam looked as he always did, controlled and at ease, slick and handsome. But Daniel looked uncomfortable, and he had good reason to be. They hadn't spoken since he'd seen her kiss Miles, and now they were standing with Luce's best friend, and Daniel's enemy turned whatever Cam was to Daniel now. But Daniel was in her home, within shouting distance of her parents. Would they lose it if they knew who he really was? How did she introduce the guy who was responsible for a thousand of her deaths, whom she was magnetically drawn to almost all the time, who was impossible and elusive and secretive and sometimes even mean, whose love she didn't understand, who was working with the devil, for crying out loud, and who, if he thought showing up here uninvited with that demon was a good idea, maybe didn't know her very well at all. "What are you doing here?" Her voice was bone dry, because she couldn't talk to Daniel without talking to Cam, too, and she couldn't talk to Cam without wanting to throw something heavy at him. Cam spoke first.
"Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. We heard your house was the place to be today." "We ran into your friend here at the airport," Daniel added, using the flat tone he spoke in when he and Luce were in public. It was more formal, making her yearn to be alone with him so they could just be real, and so she could grab him by the lapels of his stupid coat and shake him until he explained everything. This had gone on long enough. "Got to talking, shared a cab," Cam picked up, winking at Callie.
Callie smiled at Luce.
"Here I was picturing some intimate gathering at the Price household, but this is so much better. Now I can get the real scoop."
Luce could feel her friend searching her face for clues about what the deal was with these two guys.
Thanksgiving was about to get really awkward really fast. This was not the way things were supposed to go. "Turkey time," her mother called from the doorway. Her smile changed into a confused grimace when she saw the crowd outside. "Luce? What's going on?" Her old green and white striped apron was tied around her waist. "Mom," Luce said, gesturing with her hand. "This is Callie and Cam and..." She wanted to reach out to put her hand on Daniel, something, anything, to let her mom know that he was special, that this was the one. To let him know, too, that she still loved him, that everything between them was going to be okay. But she couldn't. She just stood there. "Daniel." "Okay." Her mom squinted at each of the newcomers. "Well, welcome. Luce, honey, can I have a word?" Luce went to her mother at the front door, holding up a finger to let Callie know she'd be right back. She followed her mother through the foyer, through the dim hallway hung with framed pictures from Luce's childhood, and into her parents' cozy, lamplit bedroom. Her mom sat down on the white bedspread and crossed her arms. "Feel like telling me anything?" "I'm so sorry, Mom," Luce said, sinking down on the bed. "I don't want to shut anyone out of a Thanksgiving meal, but don't you think we need to draw the line somewhere? Wasn't one unexpected car full of people enough?" "Yes, of course you're right," Luce said. "I didn't invite all these people. I'm as stunned as you are that they all showed up. It's just that we have so little time with you. We love to meet your friends," Luce's mom said, stroking her hair. "But we cherish our time with you more." "I know this is such a huge imposition, but Mom..." Luce turned her cheek into her mother's open palm. "He is special. Daniel. I didn't know he was going to come, but now that he's here, I need this time with him as much as I need it with you and Dad. Does that make any sense?" "Daniel," her mom repeated. "That beautiful blonde boy? You two are... we're in love." For some reason, Luce was trembling. Even though she had her doubts about their relationship, saying out loud to her mother that she loved Daniel made it seem true, made her remember that she did, despite everything, truly love him. "I see." When her mom nodded, her sprayed brown curls stayed in place. She smiled. "Well, we can't very well kick out everyone else but him, can we?" "Thank you, Mom." "Thank your father, too. And, honey, next time a little more advance notice, please. If I'd known you were bringing home the one, I would have grabbed your baby album from the attic." She winked, planting a kiss on Luce's cheek. Back in the living room, Luce ran into Daniel first. "I'm glad you got to be with your family, after all," he said. "I hope you're not mad at Daniel for bringing me," Cam put in, and Luce searched for haughtiness in his voice, but found none. "I'm sure you'd both rather I weren't here, but..." He looked at Daniel. "A deal's a deal." "I'm sure," Luce said coolly. Daniel's face gave nothing away. Until it darkened. Miles had come in from the dining room. Hey, your dad's about to make a toast." Miles's eyes were fixed on Luce in a way that made her think he was trying hard not to meet Daniel's stare. "Your mom told me to ask where you wanted to sit."
"Oh, wherever. Maybe next to Callie?"
A mild panic struck Luce as she thought about all the other guests and the need to keep them as far away from each other as possible, and Molly away from just about everyone. "I should have done a seating chart." Roland and Arian had made quick work of setting up the card table at the edge of the dining room table, so the banquet now stretched into the living room. Someone had thrown down a gold and white tablecloth, and her parents had even busted out their wedding china. Candles were lit and goblets of water filled. And soon, Shelby and Miles were carrying in steaming bowls of green beans and mashed potatoes, while Luce took her seat between Callie and Arian. Their intimate Thanksgiving dinner was now serving 12, four humans, two Nephilim, six fallen angels, three each on the side of good and evil, and one dog dressed as a turkey, with his bowl of scraps under the table. Miles went for the seat directly across from Luce, until Daniel flashed him a menacing look. Miles backed off, and Daniel was just about to sit down when Shelby slid right in. Smiling, with a little look of victory, Miles sat on Shelby's left, across from Callie, while Daniel, looking vaguely annoyed, sat to her right, across from Arian. Someone was kicking loose under the table, trying to get her attention, but she kept her eyes on her plate. Once everyone was seated, Luce's father stood up at the head of the table, facing her mother at the foot. He clanked his fork against his glass of red wine.
"I've been known to make a long-winded speech or two this time of year," he chuckled. "But we've never served so many hungry-looking kids before, so I'll just cut to the chase. I'm thankful for my sweet wife, Doreen, my best kid, Lucy, and all of you for joining us."
He fixed on Luce, drawing his cheeks in the way he did when he was especially proud.
"It's wonderful to see you prospering, growing into a beautiful young lady with so many great friends. We hope they'll all come again. Cheers, everyone, to friends."
Luce forced a smile, avoiding the shifty glances all her friends were sharing.
"Hear, hear."
Daniel broke the exquisitely awkward silence, raising his glass.
"What good is life without trusty, reliable friends?"
Miles barely looked at him, plunging a serving spoon deep into the mashed potatoes.
"Coming from Mr. Reliable himself."
The Prices were too busy passing dishes at opposite ends of the table to notice the dirty look Daniel directed at Miles. Molly was spooning the shrimp Diablo appetizer no one had yet touched in a growing heap on Miles's plate.
"Just say uncle when you've had enough." "Whoa, Mo, save some heat for me."
Cam reached to take the kettle of shrimp.
"Say, Miles, Roland told me you showed off some mad skills fencing the other day. I bet the girls went crazy."
He leaned forward.
"You were there, right, Luce?"
Miles had his fork poised in midair. His large blue eyes looked confused about Cam's intentions, and as if he was hoping to hear Luce say that, yes, the girls, herself included, had indeed gone crazy.
"Roland also said Miles lost," Daniel said placidly, and speared a piece of stuffing.
At the other end of the table, Gabby cut the tension with a loud and satisfied purr.
"Oh, my God, Mrs. Price, these Brussels sprouts are a little taste of heaven, aren't they, Roland?"
"Mmm," Roland agreed. "They really bring me back to a simpler time."
Luce's mother began reciting the recipe, while Luce's dad went on about local produce. Luce was trying to enjoy this rare time with her family, and Callie leaning in to whisper that everyone seemed pretty cool, especially Arian and Miles, but there were too many other situations to monitor. Luce felt like she might have to defuse a bomb at any moment. A few minutes later, passing the stuffing around the table a second time, Luce's mother said,
"You know, your father and I met when we were right around your age."
Luce had heard the story 3,500 times before.
"He was the quarterback at Athens High."
Her mother winked at Miles.
"The athletic ones drove the girls wild in those days, too."
"Yep, the Trojans were 12-2 my varsity year."
Luce's dad laughed, and she waited for his token line.
"I just had to show Doreen I wasn't as much of a tough guy off the field."
"I think it's great what a strong marriage you two have," Miles said, grabbing yet another of Luce's mother's famous yeast rolls. "Luce is lucky to have parents who are so honest and open with her and each other."
Luce's mom beamed. But before she could respond, Daniel butted in.
"There's much more to love than that, Miles. Wouldn't you say, Mr. Price, that a real relationship is more than just easy fun and games, that it takes some effort?"
"Of course, of course."
Luce's father patted his lips with his napkin.
"Why else would they call marriage a commitment? Sure, love has its ups and downs. That's life."
"Well said, Mr. P,"
Roland said, with a soulfulness beyond his smooth 17-year-old-looking face.
"God knows, I've seen some ups and downs."
"Oh, come on,"
Callie chimed in, to Luce's surprise. Poor Callie, taking everyone here at face value.
"You guys make it sound so heavy." "Callie's right," Luce's mom said. "You kids are young and hopeful, and you really should just be having fun."
Fun. So that was the goal right now? Was fun even possible for Luce? She glanced at Miles. He was smiling.
"I'm having fun," he mouthed.
That made all the difference to Luce, who looked around the table again and realized that despite everything, she was having fun too. Roland was making a show of tonguing a shrimp at Molly, who laughed for possibly the first time in history. Cam tried doting on Callie, even offering to butter her roll,
which she declined with raised eyebrows and a shy shake of her head. Shelby ate like she was training for a competition, and someone was still playing footsie with Luce underneath the table. She met Daniel's violet eyes. He winked, giving her butterflies. There was something remarkable about this gathering. It was the liveliest Thanksgiving they'd had since Luce's grandmother died and the Prices stopped going to the Louisiana Bayou for the holiday. So this was her family now, all these people, angels, demons, and whatever else they were. For better or worse, complicated, treacherous, full of ups and downs, and even at times fun. Just like her dad had said, that was life. And for a girl who had had some experience with dying, life, period, was a thing for which Luce was suddenly overwhelmingly thankful. "Well, I've had just about enough," Shelby announced after a few more minutes. "You know, food. Everyone else done? Let's wrap this up." She whistled and made a lasso gesture with her finger. "I'm eager to get back to that reform school we all go to. I'll help clear the table." Gabby jumped up and started stacking plates, dragging a reluctant Molly into the kitchen with her. Luce's mom was still shooting her furtive glances, trying to see the gathering through her daughter's eyes, which was impossible. She'd latched on to the Daniel idea pretty quickly and kept looking back and forth between the two of them. Luce wanted a chance to show her mom that what she and Daniel had was solid and wonderful and unlike anything else in the world, but there were too many other people around. Everything that should have been easy felt hard. Then Andrew stopped chewing on the felt feathers around his neck and started yipping at the door. Luce's dad stood up and reached for the dog's leash. What a relief.
"Somebody wants his after-dinner walk," he announced.
Her mother stood up, too, and Luce followed her to the door and helped her into her peacoat. Luce handed her dad his scarf. "Thank you guys for being so cool tonight. We'll do the dishes while you're gone." Her mom smiled. "You make us proud, Luce. No matter what, remember that."
"I like that, Miles," Luce's dad said, clipping Andrew's leash to his collar.
"And Daniel is just remarkable," her mom said to her dad in a leading tone of voice. Luce's cheeks flushed, and she glanced back at the table. She gave her parents a please don't embarrass me look. "Okay, have a nice long walk." Luce held open the door and watched them walk out into the night, with the eager dog practically choking on his leash. The cold air through the open door was refreshing. The house was hot, with so many people filling it up. Just before her parents disappeared down the street, Luce thought she saw a flash of something outside. Something that looked like a wing. "Did you see that?" she said, not sure who she was addressing.
"What?"
her father called, turning back. He looked so full and happy that it almost broke Luce's heart. "Nothing." Luce forced a smile as she closed the door. She could feel someone right behind her. Daniel. The warmth that made her sway where she stood.
"What did you see?"
His voice was icy, not with anger, but with fear. She looked up at him, reaching for his hands, but he had turned the other way.
"Cam," he called. "Get your bow."
Across the room, Cam's head shot up.
"Already?"
A whizzing sound outside the house silenced him. He moved away from the window and reached inside his blazer. Luce saw the flash of silver, and she remembered the arrows he'd collected from the outcast girl.
"Tell the others," Daniel said,
before turning to face Luce. His lips parted, and the desperate look on his face made her think that he might kiss her, but all he did was say,
"Do you have a storm cellar?"
"Tell me what's happening," Luce said. She could hear water running in the kitchen, Arian and Gabby singing harmony in heart and soul with Callie while they did the dishes. She could see Molly's and Roland's skittish expressions as they cleared the table. And suddenly, Luce knew that this Thanksgiving dinner was all an act, a cover-up, only she didn't know for what. Miles appeared at Luce's side.
"What's going on?" "Nothing you need to be concerned with," Cam said.
Not rudely, just stating the facts.
"Molly, Roland."
Molly put down her stack of dishes.
"What do you need us to do?"
It was Daniel who answered, speaking to Molly as if they were suddenly on the same side.
"Tell the others, and find shields. They'll be armed."
"Who?" Luce asked. "The outcasts?" Daniel's eyes landed on her, and his face fell.
They shouldn't have found us tonight. We knew there was a chance, but I really didn't want to bring this here. I'm sorry.
Daniel, Cam interrupted him. All that matters now is fighting back.
A heavy knocking thudded through the house. Cam and Daniel moved instinctively toward the front door, but Luce shook her head.
Back door, she whispered. Through the kitchen.
They all stood for a moment and listened to the creak of the back door opening. Then came a long and piercing scream.
Callie!
Luce took off running through the living room, shuddering to imagine what scene her best friend was facing. If Luce had known the outcast would show up, she would not have let Callie come. She would never have come home at all. If anything bad happened, Luce would never forgive herself. Swinging through her parents' kitchen door, Luce saw Callie, shielded behind Gabby's narrow frame. She was safe, at least for now. Luce exhaled, almost collapsing backward into the wall of muscle that Daniel, Cam, Miles, and Roland had formed behind her. Arian stood in the whitewashed doorway, a giant butcher block raised high in her hands. She looked ready to bash someone Luce couldn't quite see yet.
Good evening.
A guy's voice, stiff with formality. When Arian lowered the butcher's block, there, in the doorway, stood a tall, lean boy in a brown trench coat. He was very pale, with a narrow face and a strong nose. He looked familiar. Cropped bleach blonde hair, blank white eyes. An outcast. But Luce had seen him somewhere else before.
Phil? Shelby cried. What the hell are you doing here? And what happened to your eyes? They're all...
Daniel turned on Shelby.
You know this outcast?
Outcast? Shelby's voice quaked. He's my sorry ass ex.
He's been using you,
Roland said, as if he knew something the rest of them didn't.
I should have known, should have recognized him for what he was.
But you didn't, the outcast said, his voice eerily calm. He reached inside his trench coat and, from an inner pocket, pulled out a silver bow. From his other pocket came a silver arrow, which he swiftly knocked. He pointed it at Roland, then swept across the crowd, aiming at each of them in turn.
Please forgive my barging in. I've come to fetch Lucinda.
Daniel stepped toward the outcast.
You'll fetch no one and nothing, he said, except a swift death, unless you leave right now.
Sorry, no, can't do that, the boy responded, his muscled arms still holding the silver arrow taut.
We've had time to prepare for this night of blessed restitution. We will not leave empty-handed.
How could you, Phil? Shelby whimpered, turning to Luce. I didn't know. Honestly, Luce, I didn't. I just thought he was a creep.
The boy's lips curled up in a smile. His horrible, depthless white eyes were straight out of a nightmare.
Give her to me without a fight, or none of you will be spared.
Then Cam burst out in a long, deep belly laugh. It shook the kitchen and made the boy in the doorway twitch uncomfortably.
You and what army? Cam said. You know, I think you're the first outcast I've ever met with a sense of humor.
He glanced around the cramped kitchen.
Why don't you and I take this outside? Get it over with, shall we?
Gladly, the boy replied, a flat smile on his pale lips. Cam rolled his shoulders back as if he were working out a knot, and there, right where his shoulder blades came together, an enormous pair of golden wings split through his gray cashmere sweater. They unfurled behind him, taking up most of the kitchen. Cam's wings were so bright they were almost blinding as they pulsed.
Holy hell, Callie whispered, blinking.
More or less, Arian said, as Cam arched his wings backward and plowed past the outcast boy, through the door, and into the backyard.
Luce will explain, I'm sure.
Roland's wings unfurled with a sound like a great flock of birds taking flight. The lamplight in the kitchen highlighted their dark gold and black marbling as he squeezed out the door after Cam. Molly and Arian were right behind him, butting into each other, Arian pressing her glowing, iridescent wings ahead of Molly's cloudy bronze ones, sending off what looked like little electric sparks as they hustled out the door. Next was Gabby, whose fluffy white wings spread open as gracefully as a butterfly's, but with such speed they sent a rush of floral-scented wind through the kitchen. Daniel took Luce's hands in his. He closed his eyes, inhaled, and let his massive white wings unfurl. Fully extended, they would have filled the entire kitchen, but Daniel reined them in, close to his body. They shimmered and glowed and looked altogether too beautiful. Luce reached out and touched them with both hands, warm and satin smooth on the outside, but inside full of power. She could feel it coursing through Daniel into her. She felt so close to him, understood him completely, as if they'd become one.
"Don't worry. Everything's going to be fine. I'll always take care of you."
But what he said aloud was,
"Stay safe. Stay here."
"No," she pleaded. "Daniel."
"I'll be right back."
Then he arched his wings backward and flew out the door. Left alone inside, the unangelic gathered together. Miles was pressed against the back door, gaping out the window. Shelby had her head in her hands. Callie's face looked as white as the refrigerator. Lou slipped a hand into Callie's.
"I guess I have a few things to explain."
"Who is that boy with the bow and arrow?"
Callie whispered, flinching but still holding tight to Luce's hand.
"Who are you?"
"Me? I'm just me."
Luce shrugged, feeling a chill spread through her.
"I don't know."
"Luce," Shelby said, clearly trying not to cry. "I feel like such a chump. I swear I had no idea. The stuff I told him, I was just venting. He was always asking about you, and he was a good listener, so I had no idea what he really was. I would never, never..."
"I believe you," Luce said. She moved to the window next to Miles, looking out onto the small wooden deck her dad had built a few years ago.
"What do you think he wants?"
In the yard, fallen oak leaves had been raked into neat piles. The air smelled like a bonfire. Somewhere in the distance, a siren was going off. At the foot of the deck's three steps, Daniel, Cam, Arian, Roland, and Gabby stood side by side, facing the fence. No, not the fence, Luce realized. They faced a dark crowd of outcasts, standing at attention with their silver arrows aimed at the row of angels. The outcast boy was not alone. He'd amassed an army. Luce had to steady herself against the counter. Aside from Cam, the angels were unarmed, and she'd already seen what those arrows could do.
"Luce, stop!"
Miles called after her, but she was already rushing out the door. Even in the darkness, Luce could see that all the outcasts had similar, expressionless good looks. There were just as many girls as boys, all of them pale and dressed in the same brown trench coats, with closely cropped bleach-blonde hair for the boys and tight, almost white ponytails for the girls. The outcasts' wings arched out from their backs. They were in very, very bad shape, tattered and frayed and revoltingly filthy, practically caked with dirt. Nothing at all like the glorious wings of Daniel or Cam or any of the angels and demons Luce knew. Standing in solidarity, with their strange, empty eyes staring out, their heads tilted in different directions, the outcasts made a horrible nightmare of an army. Only, Luce could not wake up. When Daniel noticed her standing with the others on the deck, he doubled back and seized her hands. His perfect face looked wild with fear.
"I told you to stay inside."
"No," she whispered. "I won't stay locked up while the rest of you fight. I can't just keep watching people around me die for no reason."
"No reason? Let's have this fight another time, Luce."
His eyes kept darting toward the dark line of outcasts near the fence. She balled up her fists at her sides.
"Daniel."
"Your life is too precious to squander in a temper tantrum. Get inside. Now."
A loud shriek rang out in the middle of the yard. The front line of 10 outcasts raised their weapons toward the angels and loosed their arrows. Luce's head shot up, just in time to catch the sight of something, someone, catapulting off the roof. Molly. She flew down from it, a dark clot wielding two garden rakes, twirling them like batons in each of her hands. The outcasts heard, but couldn't see her coming. But Molly's rakes twirled, tilling the arrows from the air as if they were crops in a field. She landed on her black combat boots, the dull-ended silver arrows thudding and rolling along the ground, looking about as harmless as twigs. But Luce knew better.
"There will be no mercy now."
An outcast, Phil, bellowed from the other side of the yard.
"Get her inside and get the star shots,"
Cam shouted at Daniel, mounting the railing of the deck and pulling out his own silver bow.
In quick succession, he knocked and loosed three streaks of light. The outcasts writhed as three of their ranks vanished in puffs of dust. With lightning speed, Arian and Roland darted around the yard, sweeping up arrows with their wings. A second line of outcasts was advancing, readying a new volley of arrows. When they were on the brink of shooting, Gabby leaped onto the railing of the deck.
Let's see.
With a fierce look in her eyes, she pointed the tip of her right wing at the ground below the outcasts. The lawn shuddered, and then a clean seam of earth, the length of the backyard and a few feet wide, split wide open, taking at least 20 outcasts deep into the black chasm. They bellowed hollow, lonely cries on the way down. Down to God knew where. The outcasts behind them skidded, halting just in front of the awful gorge Gabby had pulled from nowhere. Their heads moved from left to right, as if to help their blind eyes make sense of what just happened. A few more outcasts teetered on the edge and tumbled in. Their wails grew fainter, until no sound could be heard. An instant later, the earth creaked like a rusty hinge and closed back up. Gabby drew her downy wing back to her side with the utmost elegance. She wiped her brow.
Well, that should help.
But then another bright shower of silver splinters rained from the sky. One of them thunked into the top step of the deck at Luce's feet. Daniel yanked the arrow out of the wooden step, wound up his arm, and flung it sharply, like a lethal dart, straight into the forehead of an advancing outcast. There was a flash of light, like a camera flash, and then the white-eyed boy didn't even have time to cry out at the impact. He just vanished into thin air. Daniel's eyes raced over Luce's body, and he patted her down, as if in disbelief that she was still alive. At her side, Callie gulped.
Did that guy really?
Yes, Luce said.
Don't do this, Luce, Daniel said. Don't make me drag you inside. I have to fight. You have to get away from here. Now.
Luce had seen enough to agree. She turned back toward the house, reaching for Callie. But then, through the open doorway of the kitchen, she caught a brutal glimpse of outcasts. Three of them, standing inside her house, silver bows aimed to shoot.
No!
Daniel bellowed, rushing to shield Luce. Shelby lurched out of the kitchen and onto the deck, slamming the door behind her. Three distinct thumps of arrows struck the other side of the door.
Hey, she's exonerated,
Cam called from the lawn, nodding at Shelby briefly, before bashing an arrow into an outcast girl's skull.
Okay, new plan, Daniel muttered. Find someplace to take cover somewhere nearby. All of you.
He addressed Callie and Shelby, and for the first time all night, Miles. He grabbed Luce by the arms.
Stay away from the starshots, he pleaded. Promise me.
He kissed her quickly, then shooed them all against the back wall of the deck. The glow of so many angels' wings was brilliant enough that Luce, Callie, Shelby, and Miles had to shade their eyes. They crouched down and crawled along the deck, shadows of the railing dancing before them, while Luce directed everyone to the side yard. To shelter. There had to be some somewhere. More outcasts stepped out from the shadows. They appeared in the high branches of faraway trees, came ambling out from around the raised garden beds and the termite-eaten old swing set Luce had used as a kid. Their silver bows gleamed in the moonlight. Cam was the only one on the other side with a bow. He never paused to count how many outcasts he was picking off. He just loosed arrow after arrow with deadly precision into their hearts. But for each one that vanished, another seemed to appear. When he ran out of arrows, he wrenched the wooden picnic table out of its decade-old rut in the ground and held it in front of him with one arm, like a shield. Volley after volley of arrows bounced off the tabletop and fell to the ground at his feet. He just stooped, plucked, and fired. Stooped, plucked, and fired. The others had to get more creative. Roland beat his golden wings with such force that the air around him sent the arrows back in the direction they had come from, taking out the unseeing outcasts several at a time. Molly charged the line again and again, her rake spiraling like a samurai's swords. Arian yanked Luce's old tire swing from its tree and twirled it like a lasso, deflecting arrows into the fence, while Gabby raced around picking them up. She spun and slashed like a dervish, taking out any outcast who got too close, smiling sweetly as the arrows bit their skin.
Daniel had commandeered the Price's rusted iron horseshoes from under the porch. He pitched them at the outcasts, sometimes knocking three of them senseless with one horseshoe as it ricocheted off their skulls. Then he would pounce on them, slip the star shots from their bows, and drive the arrows into their hearts with his bare hands. At the edge of the deck, Luce caught sight of her father's storage shed and motioned for the other three to follow. They rolled over the railing to the grass below and, ducking, hurried to the shed. They were almost at the entrance when Luce heard a quick whiz in the air. Callie cried out in pain. "Callie!" Luce whirled around. But her friend was still there. She was rubbing her shoulder where the arrow had grazed her, but otherwise she was unharmed.
"That totally stings."
Luce reached out to touch her.
"How did you..."
Callie shook her head.
"Get down," Shelby shouted.
Luce dropped to her knees, tugging the others down with her and pulling them inside the shed. Among the dirty shadows of Luce's dad's tools, lawnmower, and old sporting equipment, Shelby crawled over to Luce. Her eyes glistened and her lip was quivering.
"I can't believe this is happening," she whispered, grabbing hold of Luce's arm. "You don't know how sorry I am. It's all my fault."
"It's not your fault," Luce said quickly. Of course Shelby hadn't known who Phil really was, what he really wanted from her, what this night would bring. Luce knew what it was like to carry around guilt for doing something you didn't understand. She wouldn't have wished it on anyone, least of all Shelby.
"Where is he?" Shelby asked. "I could kill that sorry-ass freak."
"No," Luce held Shelby back. "You're not going out there. You could get killed."
"I don't get it," Callie said. "Why would anyone want to hurt you?"
That was when Miles stepped toward the entrance to the shed, into a beam of moonlight. He was carrying one of Luce's father's kayaks over his head.
"Nobody's going to hurt Luce," he said as he stepped outside with it.
Right into the battle.
"Miles," Luce screamed. "Come back."
She rose to her feet to take off after him, then froze, stunned by the sight of him chucking the kayak right into one of the outcasts. It was Phil. His blank eyes gaped, and he cried out, falling to the grass as the kayak struck him. Pinned and helpless, his dirty wings writhed on the ground. For an instant, Miles looked proud of himself, and Luce felt a little bit proud, too. But then a short outcast girl stepped forward, cocked her head like a dog listening to a silent whistle, raised her silver bow, and aimed point-blank at Miles's chest.
"No mercy," she said tonelessly. Miles was defenseless against this strange girl, who looked like she had no understanding of mercy, not even for the nicest, most innocent kid in the world.
"Stop!" Luce cried out, her heart pounding in her ears as she ran out of the shed.
She could sense the battle going on around her, but all she could see was that arrow, poised to enter Miles's chest, poised to kill yet another of her friends. The outcast girl's head canted on her neck. Her vacant eyes turned on Luce, then widened slightly, like, just as Arian had said, she really could see the burning of Luce's soul.
"Don't shoot him."
Luce held out her hands in surrender.
"I'm the one you want."
19. The truce is broken. The outcast girl lowered her bow. When the arrow relaxed along its bowstring, the string made a creaking sound, like an attic door opening. Her face was as calm as a still pond on a windless day. She was Luce's height, with clear, dewy skin, pale lips, and dimples, even in the absence of a smile.
"If you wish the boy to live," she said, her voice flat, "I will yield to you."
Around them, the others had stopped fighting. The tire swing rolled to a stop, thudding against the corner of the fence. Roland's wings slowed to a soft beating and carried him down to earth. Everyone was still, but the air was charged with an electric silence. Luce could feel the weight of so many gazes falling on her. Callie, Miles and Shelby, Daniel, Arian and Gabby, Cam, Roland and Molly, the blind gazes of the outcasts themselves. But she couldn't wrench herself away from the girl with the depthless white eyes.
"You won't kill him just because I say not to?"
Luce was so baffled she laughed.
"I thought you wanted to kill me."
"Kill you?" The girl's mechanical voice lilted upward, registering surprise. "Not at all. We would die for you.
We want you to come with us. You are the last hope. Our entrance.
Entrance? Miles voiced what Luce was too surprised to say. To what?
To heaven, of course. The girl peered at Luce with her dead eyes. You are the price.
No.
Luce shook her head, but the girl's words knocked around inside her mind, echoing in a way that made her feel so hollow she could barely stand. Entrance into heaven. The price. Luce didn't understand. The outcast would take her and do what? Use her as some sort of bargaining chip? This girl couldn't even see Luce to know who she was. If Luce had learned one thing at Shoreline, it was that no one could keep the myth straight. They were too old, too convoluted. Everyone knew there was a history, one Luce had been involved in for a long time, but nobody seemed to know why.
Don't listen to her, Luce. She's a monster.
Daniel's wings were trembling, as if he thought she might be tempted to go. Luce's shoulders began to itch, a hot prickling that left the rest of her body cold. Lucinda, the outcast girl called.
Okay, hold on a minute, Luce said to the girl. She turned to Daniel.
I want to know, what is this truce? And don't tell me nothing, and don't tell me you can't explain. Tell me the truth. You owe it to me.
You're right, Daniel said, surprising Luce.
He kept sneaking glances at the outcast, as if she might spirit Luce away at any moment.
Cam and I drew it up. We agreed to put aside our differences for 18 days, all angels and demons. We came together to hunt down other enemies, like them.
He pointed to the outcast.
But why?
Because of you. Because you needed time. Our end goals may be different, but for now, Cam and I, and all of our kin, we work as allies. We have one priority in common.
The glimpse Luce had seen in the announcer, that sickening scene with Daniel and Cam working together, that was supposed to be okay because they'd agreed upon a truce? To give her time?
Not that you even stuck by the truce.
Cam spat in Daniel's direction.
What good is a truce if you don't honor it?
You didn't stand by it either, Luce said to Cam. You were in the forest outside Shoreline.
Protecting you, said Cam. Not taking you out on moonlight parades.
Luce turned to Arian.
Whatever the truce is or isn't, once it's over, does that mean that Cam suddenly the enemy again? And Roland, too? This doesn't make any sense.
Say the word, Lucinda, the outcast said. I will take you far from all of this.
To what? To where? Luce asked.
There was something appealing about just getting away, from all the heartache and struggle and confusion.
Don't do something you'll regret, Luce, Cam warned.
It was strange the way he sounded like the voice of reason, compared to Daniel, who looked practically paralyzed. Luce glanced around her for the first time since leaving the shed. The fighting had ceased. The same felt of dust that had coated the cemetery at Sword and Cross now caked the grass of the backyard. While their group of angels seemed fully intact and accounted for, the outcasts had lost most of their army. About 10 stood at a distance, watching. Their silver bows were lowered. The outcast girl was still waiting for Luce to answer. Her eyes shone in the night, and her feet inched backward as the angels pressed closer to her. When Cam approached, the girl raised her silver bow again, slowly, and pointed it at his heart. Luce watched him stiffen.
You don't want to go with the outcasts, he told Luce, especially not tonight.
Don't tell her what she does or doesn't want, Shelby butted in.
I'm not saying she should go with the albino freaks or anything. Just everybody quit babying her and let her do her own thing for once. It's like enough already.
Her voice boomed across the yard, making the outcast girl jump. She turned to aim her arrow at Shelby. Luce sucked in her breath. The silver arrow quivered in the outcast's hands. She pulled back on the bowstring. Luce held her breath. But before the girl could shoot, her glossy eyes widened. The bow tumbled from her hands, and her body disappeared in a dim gray flash of light. 2 feet behind where the outcast girl had stood, Molly lowered a silver bow. She had shot the girl cleanly in the back.
What? Molly barked as the whole group turned to gape at her.
I like that Nephilim. She reminds me of someone I know.
She jerked an arm to gesture at Shelby, who said,
Thanks. Seriously, that was cool.
Molly shrugged, oblivious to the towering dark presence rising up behind her. The outcast boy Miles had beaten to the ground with a kayak. Phil. He swung the kayak behind his body, as if it were a baseball bat, and batted Molly clear across the lawn. She landed with a grunt on the grass. Tossing the kayak aside, the outcast reached into his trench coat for one last shining arrow. His dead eyes were the only expressionless part of his face. The rest of him, his snarl, his brow, even his cheekbones, looked utterly ferocious. His white skin seemed stretched across his bony skull. His hands looked more like claws. Anger and desperation had changed him from a pale and strange but good-looking guy into an actual monster. He raised his silver bow and took aim at Luce.
"I've been patiently waiting for my chance with you for weeks. Now, I don't mind being a little more forceful than my sister," he growled. "You will come with us."
On either side of Luce, silver bows were raised. Cam brought his out from inside his coat once again, and Daniel scrambled to the ground to pick up the bow that the outcast girl had just dropped. Phil seemed to expect this. His face twisted into a dark smile.
"Do I need to kill your lover to get you to join me?" he asked, pointing his arrow now at Daniel. "Or do I need to kill them all?"
Luce stared at the strange flat tip of the silver arrow, less than 10 feet from Daniel's chest. No chance Phil would miss from this range. She'd seen the arrows extinguish a dozen angels tonight with that paltry flash of light. But she'd also seen an arrow glance off Callie's skin, like it was nothing more than the dull stick it appeared to be. The silver arrows killed angels, she suddenly realized, not humans. She leaped in front of Daniel.
"I won't let you hurt him, and your arrows can't hurt me."
A sound escaped from Daniel, a weird half-laugh, half-sob. She turned to him, wide-eyed. He looked afraid, but more than that, he looked guilty. She thought of the conversation they'd had under the gnarled peach tree at Sword and Cross, the first time he told her about her reincarnations. She remembered sitting with him on the beach in Mendocino when he talked of his place in heaven before her. What a struggle it had been to get him to open up about those early days. She still felt like there was more. There had to be more. The creak of the bowstring snapped her attention back to the outcast, who was pulling back the silver arrow. Now it was aimed at Miles.
"Enough talk," he said. "I'll take your friends out one at a time until you surrender to me."
In her mind, Luce saw a bright blink of light, a swirl of color, and a whirling montage of her lives flashing before her eyes. Her mom and dad and Andrew, the parents she'd seen in Mount Shasta, Vera ice skating on the frozen pond, the girl she'd been swimming under the waterfall in a yellow halter-top bathing suit, other cities, homes, and times she couldn't recognize yet, Daniel's face from 1,000 different angles under 1,000 different lights, and blaze after blaze after blaze. Then she blinked and was back in the yard. The outcasts were drawing closer, huddling together and whispering to Phil. He kept waving them back, agitated, trying to focus on Luce. Everyone was tense. She saw Miles staring at her. He must have been terrified. But no, not terrified. He was fixating on her with so much intensity that his gaze seemed to vibrate her very core. Luce grew woozy, and her vision clouded. What followed was an unfamiliar sensation of something being lifted off her, like a casing being removed from her skin. And she heard her voice say, "Don't shoot! I surrender!" Only it was echoing and disembodied, and Luce hadn't actually said the words. She followed the sound with her eyes, and her body grew rigid at what she saw. Another Luce standing behind the outcast, tapping him on the shoulder. But this was no glimpse of a former life. This was her, in her skinny black jeans and plaid shirt with the missing button, with her black hair cropped and newly dyed, with her hazel eyes taunting the outcast, with the burning of her same soul clearly visible to him, clearly visible to all the other angels, too. This was a mirror image of her. This was Miles's doing. His gift. He had splintered Luce off into a second self, just as he'd told her he could do on her very first day at Shoreline.
"They say it's easy to do with the people you, like, love," he'd said.
He loved her. She couldn't think about that right now. While everyone's eyes were drawn to the reflection, the real Luce retreated 2 steps and hid inside the shed.
"What's happening?" Cam barked at Daniel.
"I don't know,"
Daniel whispered hoarsely. Only Shelby seemed to understand.
"He did it," she said under her breath.
The outcast swung his bow around to aim at this new Luce, like he didn't quite trust the victory.
"Let's do this,"
Luce heard her own voice saying in the middle of the yard. "I can't stay here with them. Too many secrets. Too many lies." A part of her did feel that way, that she couldn't keep going on like this, that something had to change.
"You will come with me and join my brothers and my sisters," the outcast said, sounding hopeful.
His eyes made her nauseated. He held out his ghostly white hand.
"I will," Luce's voice projected.
"Luce, no."
Daniel sucked in his breath.
"You can't."
Now the remaining outcasts raised their bows at Daniel and Cam, and the rest of them, lest they interfere. Luce's mirror stepped forward, slipped her hand inside Phil's.
"Yes, I can."
The monster outcast cradled her in his stiff white arms. There was a great flap of dirty wings. A stale cloud of dust stormed up from the ground. Inside the shed, Luce held her breath. She heard Daniel gasp as Luce's mirror and the outcast soared up and out of the backyard. The rest of them looked incredulous, except for Shelby and Miles.
"What the hell just happened?" Arian said. "Did she really?"
"No,"
Daniel cried.
"No, no, no."
Luce's heart ached as he tore at his hair, spun in a circle, and let his wings bloom out to their full size. Immediately, the fleet of remaining outcasts spread their own dingy brown wings and took flight. Their wings were so thin, they had to beat frantically just to stay in the air. They were closing in on Phil, trying to form a shield around him so he could take Luce wherever he thought he was taking her. But Cam was faster. The outcasts were probably 20 feet in the air when Luce heard one final arrow loose from its bow. Cam's arrow wasn't meant for Phil. It was meant for Luce. And his aim was perfect. Luce froze as her mirror image disappeared in a great bloom of white light. In the sky, Phil's tattered wings shuddered open. Empty. A horrible roar escaped his mouth. He started to swoop back toward Cam, followed by his army of outcasts. But then he stopped midway, as if he'd realized there was no more reason to go back.
"So it begins again," he called down to Cam, to all of them. "It could have ended peacefully, but tonight you've made a new sect of immortal enemies. Next time, we will not negotiate."
Then the outcast disappeared into the night. Back in the yard, Daniel barreled into Cam, throwing him to the ground.
"What's wrong with you?"
he yelled, his fists wailing down on Cam's face.
"How could you?"
Cam strained to stop him. They rolled over each other on the grass.
"It was a better end for her, Daniel."
Daniel was seething, tackling Cam, slamming his head into the dirt. Daniel's eyes blazed.
"I'll kill you."
"You know I'm right," Cam shouted, not fighting back at all.
Daniel froze. He closed his eyes.
"I don't know anything now."
His voice was ragged. He'd been gripping Cam by the lapel, but now he just slumped to the ground, burying his face in the grass. Luce wanted to go to him, to fall on him and tell him everything was going to be okay. Except it wasn't. What she'd seen tonight was too much. She felt sick from watching herself, Miles's mirror image of her, die from the starshot. Miles had saved her life. She couldn't get over it. And the rest of them thought Cam had ended it. Her head swam as she stepped forward from the shadows of the shed, planning to tell the others not to worry, that she was still alive. But then she sensed the presence of something else. An announcer was quivering in the doorway. Luce stepped out of the shed and approached it. Slowly, it broke free of a shadow cast by the moon. It slithered along the grass toward her for a few feet, picking up a dirty coat of dust left by the battle. When it reached Luce, it shuddered up and rose along her body until it hovered blackly over her head. She closed her eyes and felt herself raising her hand to meet it. The darkness fell to rest in her palm. It made a cold, sizzling sound.
"What is that?"
Daniel's head snapped around at the noise. He raised himself from the ground.
Luce!
She stayed put as the others gasped at the sight of her standing in front of the shed. She didn't want to glimpse an announcer. She'd seen enough for one night. She didn't even know why she was doing this. Until she did. She wasn't looking for a vision. She was looking for a way out. Something far away enough to step through to. It had been too long since she'd had a moment to think on her own. What she needed was a break from everything. Time to go, she said to herself. The shadow door that presented itself in front of her wasn't perfect. It was jagged around the edges and it stank of sewage. But Luce parted its surface anyway.
You don't know what you're doing, Luce.
Roland's voice reached her at the edge of the doorway.
It could take you anywhere.
Daniel was on his feet, jogging toward her.
What are you doing?
She could hear the profound relief in his voice that she was still alive, and the sheer panic that she could manipulate the announcer. His anxiety only spurred her on. She wanted to look back, to apologize to Callie, to thank Miles for what he'd done, to tell Arian and Gabby not to worry the way she knew they were going to anyway, to leave word for her parents, to tell Daniel not to follow her, that she needed to do this for herself. But her chance to break free was closing. So she stepped forward and called over her shoulder to Roland. Guess I'll just have to figure it out. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Daniel rushing toward her, like he hadn't believed until now that she would do it. She felt the words rising up in her throat. I love you. She did. She did forever. But if she and Daniel had forever, their love could wait until she figured out a few important things about herself, about her lives and the life she had ahead of her. Tonight, there was only time to wave goodbye, take a deep breath, and leap into the dismal shadow, into darkness, into her past. Epilogue. Pandemonium.
What just happened?
Where did she go? Who taught her how to do that?
The frantic voices in the backyard sounded wobbly and distant to Daniel. He knew the other fallen angels were arguing, looking for announcers in the shadows of the yard. Daniel was an island, closed off to everything but his own agony. He had failed her. He had failed. How could it be? For weeks he'd run himself ragged, his only goal to keep her safe until the moment when he could no longer offer her protection. Now that moment had come and gone, and so had Luce. Anything could happen to her, and she could be anywhere. He'd never felt so hollow and ashamed.
Why can't we just find the announcer she stepped through, put it back together, and go after her?
The Nephilim boy, Miles. He was on his knees combing the grass with his fingers, like a moron.
They don't work that way, Daniel snarled at him. When you step into time, you take the announcer with you. That's why you never do it unless...
Cam looked at Miles, almost pityingly.
Please tell me Luce knows more about announcer travel than you do.
Shut up, Shelby said, standing over Miles protectively. If he hadn't thrown Luce's reflection, Phil would have taken her. Shelby looked guarded and afraid, out of place among the fallen angels. Years ago, she'd had a crush on Daniel, one he'd never requited, of course. But until tonight, he'd always thought well of the girl. Now she was just in the way.
You said yourself Luce would be better off dead than with the outcasts, she said, still defending Miles.
The outcasts you all but invited here.
Arian stepped into the conversation, turning on Shelby, whose face reddened.
Why would you assume some Nephilim child could detect the outcast?
Molly challenged Arian.
You were at that school. You should have noticed something.
All of you, quiet.
Daniel couldn't think straight. The yard was crammed with angels, but Luce's absence made it feel utterly empty. He could hardly stand to look at anyone else. Shelby, for walking straight into the outcast's easy trap. Miles, for thinking he had some stake in Luce's future. Cam, for what he'd tried to do. Oh, that moment when Daniel thought he'd lost her to Cam Starshot. His wings had felt too heavy to lift, colder than death. In that instant, he'd given up all hope. But it was only a trick of the eye, a thrown reflection, nothing special under ordinary circumstances, but tonight, the last thing Daniel had been expecting. It had given him a horrible shock, one that had nearly killed him. Until the joy of her resurrection, there was still hope, as long as he could find her.
He'd been stunned, watching Luce open up the shadow. Awed and impressed, and painfully attracted to her. But more than all of that, stunned. How many times had she done it before without his even knowing?
"What do you think?" Cam asked, coming up beside him.
Their wings drew toward each other, that old magnetic force, and Daniel was too drained to pull away.
"I'm going after her," he said.
"Good plan," Cam sneered.
"Just go after her. Anywhere in time and space across the several thousand years. Why should you need a strategy?"
His sarcasm made Daniel want to tackle him a second time.
"I'm not asking you for your help or your advice, Cam."
Only two star shots remained in the yard, the one he'd picked up from the outcast Molly had killed, and the one Cam had found on the beach at the beginning of the truce. There would have been a nice symmetry if Cam and Daniel had been working as enemies right now. Two bows, two star shots, two immortal foes. But no, not yet. They had to eliminate too many others before they could turn on each other again.
"What Cam means,"
Roland stood between them, speaking to Daniel in a low voice,
"is that this might take some team effort. I've seen the way these kids flop through the announcers. She doesn't know what she's doing, Daniel. She's going to get into trouble pretty quick."
"I know.
It's not a sign of weakness to let us help," Roland said.
"I can help," Shelby called. She'd been whispering with Miles. "I think I might know where she is."
"You?" Daniel asked. "You've helped enough, both of you."
"Daniel?"
"I know Luce better than anyone in the world."
Daniel turned away from all of them, toward the dark, empty space in the yard where she'd stepped through.
"Far better than any of you ever will. I don't need your help."
"You know her past," Shelby said, walking in front of him so that he had to look at her. "You don't know what she's been through these past few weeks. I'm the one who's been around while she glimpsed her past lives. I'm the one who saw her face when she found the sister she lost when you kissed her, and she..." Shelby trailed off.
"I know you all hate me right now, but I swear to... oh, whatever it is you guys believe in. You can trust me from here on out. Miles, too. We want to help. We're going to help. Please."
She reached for Daniel.
"Trust us."
Daniel wrested himself away from her. Trust as an activity had always made him uneasy. What he had with Luce was unshakable. There was never any need even to work on trust. Their love just was. But for all eternity, Daniel had never been able to find faith in anyone or anything else. And he didn't want to start now. Down the street, a dog yipped. Then again, louder. Closer. Luce's parents, coming back from their walk. In the dark yard, Daniel's eyes found Gabby's. She was standing close to Callie, probably consoling her. She'd already retracted her wings.
"Just go," Gabby mouthed to him in the desolate, dust-filled backyard.
What she meant was, go get her. She would handle Luce's parents. She would see that Callie got home. She would cover all the bases so that Daniel could go after what mattered. "We'll find you and help you as soon as we can." The moon drifted out from behind a mist of cloud. Daniel's shadow lengthened on the grass at his feet. He watched it swell a little, then began to draw up the announcer inside it. When the cool, damp darkness brushed against him, Daniel realized that he hadn't stepped through time in ages. Looking back was not normally his style. But the motions were still in him, buried in his wings, or his soul, or his heart. He moved quickly, peeling the announcer off his own shadow, giving it a quick pinch to separate it from the ground. Then he threw it, like a piece of potter's clay, onto the air directly in front of him. It formed a clean, finite portal. He had been a part of every one of Luce's past lives. There was no reason he wouldn't be able to find her. He opened the door. No time to waste. His heart would take him to her. He had an innate sense that something bad was just around the bend, but a hope that something incredible was waiting in the distance. It had to be. His burning love for her coursed through him until he felt so full he didn't know whether he would fit through the portal. He wrapped his wings close against his body and bounded into the announcer. Behind him, in the yard, a distant commotion, whispers and rustling and shouts. He didn't care. He didn't care about any of them, really. Only her. He whooped as he broke through.
"Daniel!"
Voices. behind him, following, getting closer, calling his name as he tunneled deeper and deeper into the past. Would he find her? Without question. Would he save her? Always. This is Justine Eyre. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Torment by Lauren Kate. This program was produced by Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2010 by Tinderbox Books, LLC, and Lauren Kate. Production copyright 2010 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.